Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 21st of Tishrei, Hoshana Rabbah. Thank you for joining me. If you are joining me on Hoshana Rabbah, you are somewhat exceptional then, because as it happens, there are not many tshuvot, really not many tshuvot written on Hoshana Rabbah. Usually on a day when I search for tshuvot, there are more than a few choices, you know, 20, 30, 40 choices, even more. But Hoshana Rabbah had really very few choices because I think people were very, very busy with preparations for Shemini Atzeret. And as we'll see in the first, I found two short tshuvot, two short responses. That's what we'll do today. But I think also many people had stayed up all night and not writing responses. So maybe they also, by the time they woke up or whatever they did the next day, they had other stuff to take care of. So the first very brief tshuva that we'll see is from Shut Shoel Umeshi, from Rav Yosef Shoel Natan Zon, in the Mahadura Tlita, in the third edition, third volume, third section, in the first volume of that. A Mahadura really means a printing. Siman Kofchet, response number 108. He talks about having received a letter yesterday, and even though today's Hoshana Rabbah, and he's really very tired because he was up all night, so it sounds like he was up all night and didn't go to sleep, meaning when people stay up all night in our time, let's say on Shavuos night, very often they'll stay up all night and then they'll go to sleep and they'll sleep for much of the day, and it's almost like they didn't miss out on any sleep. But he's saying, I'm very, very tired because I didn't sleep all night, and it sounds like he means that he's been up all day. In any case, he is going to do his best to answer to this response, he says, because this is the second letter he got from the guy. And in writing the letter, the man said to him, please don't not respond, because that'll be embarrassing. I will have not gotten a response twice from you. So therefore, he says he ordered people to write down his opinion. It sounds like he has a recording secretary, and he just has to dictate it to his secretary that he should write that. So they had a case where there was a shochet in this town, whoever was writing to him. The man was, in those days, it was a shochet ubotek, right? Somebody who would check the knife, and then he would slaughter the animal, and he would take care of all of the process of butchering animals. And this person, this man, had been overly lenient in the issue of checking the lungs of the animal after it had been killed. And therefore, they had removed him from his position of checking. And now he wants to go back. He wants to return to his position. I think there's a monetary element to this, but it's also embarrassing. He used to be a shochet uvotek, somebody who did the knife, and then he checked the animal, and then he checked everything about the animal to make sure that it was fully kosher, and then he would say it's kosher. And now he no longer is allowed to do that. It's the last part of the process. So he wants to know how he can get back. So Rav Yosef Shoel Natan Zon says, the truth is, the halacha is that you didn't have to remove him from the position to begin with, because even somebody who is not handling the bedika properly, we think, Rav Yosef Shoel Natan Zon is going to say, it's enough bekabalat divrei chaverut. It would be enough to gather him before a beit din and have him publicly accept to act in the ways that fully halachic people do. A chaver in the time of the Gemara, the time of the Mishnah, the Gemara was somebody who was very careful about halacha. So kabbalat divrei chaverut means that the person publicly accepts and agrees that he's going to follow the rulings of halacha, as Bari ben Lev had written, that in a drabanan, if somebody has violated drabanans, so in order for us to be confident that they will return from that and change and improve their ways, they just need kabbalat divrei chaverut bilvat, even though others disagreed. The Rishon also thinks that enough people held that way that we are allowed to do that. So now when it comes to bidikat ha-rea, so checking the lungs after every shkita, so that's, I think that's about, we check the lungs, and then if you have anything in it, you'll inflate them, and that's like being about glot, and that's where you get to glot kosher and things like that. In the mid-1800s, is saying that is a derabbanan. And it's not like he's doing it for any financial benefit, because this person, he's not a private shochet where he shechs his own animals and he finds out that they're not kosher, he loses the money. He just shechs for other people. And he's also, it's a communal position, so he gets a salary from the community, but nonetheless, it's a derabbanan, you have to check the reya, you have to check these things, and he wasn't doing it. But it's good enough, it's only derabbanan, that he can be mekabel divrei chaverut, that he just publicly says he's going to keep the halacha in the future. More than that, says Rav Yosef Shoel Natan Zon in Shut Shoel Umeshiv, he found a Shut Avodat HaGershuni. He probably would have said Avodas HaGershuni. He found another response from Avos HaGershini, which is interesting to me because, as it happens, the other tshuva that I found for Hoshana Rabbah is from this sefer, Avodas HaGershini, which we've never seen together before. It's written by Rav Gershon ben Yitzchak Ashkenazi, who was born around 1620. He learned under the Bach, he learned under other important people, and he was the son-in-law of Menachem Mendel Krochmal of Nicholsburg, who wrote a book of response called Tzemach Tzedek. It was very well known as the Tzemach Tzedek. So we're going to see a different shuv in the Avodas HaGershini, but it was just serendipitous, let's say, that while I was looking for tshuvot and found that Avodas HaGershini decided to expand our library of Meshivim, who we studied together, that Rav Yosef Shaul Notzer had referred to a different tshuva of the Avodas HaGershini anyway. So Avodas HaGershini says that he didn't think he even needed Kabbalah's Divrei Chaverus when it was Durabanas. If the person is violating Durabanas, you just have to teach him and warn him for the future that he has to keep to Isurim. So that raises sort of interesting issues about when people are violating ordinary standards of conduct, what do we expect of them or not expect of them in terms of restoring them to their positions or not, yes or no, removing them from their positions. It's an issue and a question that comes up today. But so Rav Yosef thought it would have been good enough with Kabbalah's Divrei Chaverut, that he probably says he's going to act as a chaver in the future, whereas, and then he knows that the Avodas HaGershini thought you didn't even need to go that far as long as you taught him the right way and warned him about acting that way in the future. On the other hand, he says, in our situation with the Shulchan Avodah, he thinks that he's actually, that would be too far. That's not correct. Because here there is a Chashash Torah. Because when we say that Bedikas HaRea is Dirabanan, that the need to check the lungs is a rabbinic requirement after shechting an animal, that an animal that you shecht, then everything seems fine, that you don't have to check for anything, that's only true if we don't have a Reuta. If we haven't seen any problem that caused us to think there might have been a problem. That then, according to the Torah law, we could follow the rov. Most animals are kosher, and therefore it's a derabanan to check the rea, to check the lungs. But where there is a reuta, where there is something that's gone wrong, and he says it's kosher shelo kadin, so in that situation, apparently, it was that the shochet would see something on the lungs and then not bother to check and say it's just kosher. So that actually might be a d'oraita problem, because once you see an issue with the lungs, it means you can't just assume that this animal is part of the majority of animals. And therefore, and that, by the way, not that we know this, but it explains a contradiction, an apparent contradiction in the Avodas HaGershini itself, where there were two tshuvot, and one tshuva he agreed with his father-in-law, the Tzemach Tzedek, to be machmir, that you have to remove somebody from a position, and there was a chashash Torah, there was a Torah problem in a certain case of not checking the lungs, and then another situation like we saw already, he was very meekin and said it's only Darabanan, and you have to cheat the Shochet do better. So theoretically, one could have said he changed his mind, but Rav Yosef Shaul Notzer says you don't have to say that. You can say that in one situation there was something leading him to think there was a problem, and the other situation there wasn't, and that's how you got to the two Sakim that you have. So in our situation, he says, it means that you did have to get rid of this shochet. You have to remove him from his position because there is a problem with this shochet abodek and with this ritual slaughterer, and it might be a Torah problem. Not only that, there was evidence that he didn't sharpen his knife properly. It is very important. The shkita might be very sharp in order to be sure, or as sure as possible, the shkita goes well, and therefore he agrees with the man who wrote him the letter, and his father-in-law apparently got involved as well, who was also a rav, and that you can't eat any of the shkita that he checked, and before he can check even birds, which are much less complicated, don't have a lungs problem there, he has to show the knife to this person writing the letter, who was probably the rav of the community, and the only out is to help him out is if this man is supporting children, which often happens, and there's a worry for Meshivim if he's busy supporting children. So then you can find ways around to try to help him out and try to help him get back into his position. But for now, until he does something that changes his position, Yosef Shaul Notzer doesn't agree. So that's one tshuva for Hoshana Rabbah. It's not really Hoshana Rabbah related anyway whatsoever. It was a tshuva that had come, a letter had come to and was apparently very urgent because the man didn't want to feel like he wasn't being answered. And so this is the answer he gave about when we can and cannot trust people who have violated public standards already, what we require of them before we can trust them to leave them in their positions again. In this situation, Yosef Shalom Nutzelzon took the position that if it was a Drabbanan issue, he just needs to publicly accept that he will keep it in the future. And if it's a Doraita issue, then you really have to take him at his position so you can be more confident, we can be more sure that he's actually going to keep it in the future, and however that works. So that's one tshuva that we're going to see. The other one, also fairly brief, is by this Avodas HaGer Shuni, it's Simon Tzadi Chet, and he talks about the fact that B'Leil Hoshana Rabbah, this is the night of Hoshana Rabbah, when we're all busy with the Arava. So it's interesting because in the night of Hoshana Rabbah, we're not busy with the Arava at all. What he means is, and it's clear from the opening, he means that their Tikkun Leil Hoshana Rabbah and their talk and their thinking was trying to absorb the lessons of the Arava. And he talks about doing mystical practices, Kayadua Liyode Chain. As people who know, Chain is often taken as an acronym for Chochmat Nistar, for the esoteric arts and esoteric ideas. So he's involved in all of that stuff, but he's interrupting himself briefly. But that's why he's going to only be brief, because he's busy with Hoshana Rabbah. But it feels like it's important for this man, for whoever wrote him the letter, to have an answer. And the case was about a barrel of wine that a Jew had left with a non-Jew to transport. And the non-Jew had other workers for him, and the Jew told the non-Jew that he's going to be gone for a while, and he let him be the whole watcher over the wine. The Jew either didn't know that the halacha is that we can't leave unsealed wine with a non-Jew, or he thought it was sealed and it wasn't actually sealed. It wasn't double sealed for sure. The question is, what are you going to do with the wine? So the Rebbe Avodas HaGershoni says, L'chora nirashayayin asur b'shtia. It would seem like you can't drink the wine, and I don't have time to go into this, but he had seen from the man who wrote the letter that he wanted to be machmir because he thought that the fact that it was sealed with an ordinary wooden seal on top, that the barrel was just closed off on top, wouldn't be good enough, even though it was very heavily sealed, very strongly sealed, such that the only way to open it would be to really put in a lot of effort. But the man who wrote in the letter didn't think it counted as a seal. So if there were two seals, and one of them was the fact that it was closed very tightly and very carefully and very well, such that it would take a lot of effort to open it, that wasn't going to be enough. That's what the man writing the letter, that's what the letter writer had said. So the Avodas HaGershoni agrees that there are sources. The Maaseh Binyamin was an authoritative tshuva, which I think we've seen once upon a time together before, but the Maaseh Binyamin had held that way, and the Taz seemed to have held that way. But he, the Avodas HaGershoni, says his understanding and his tradition was that it all is a function of the amount of effort it would take. Because we don't assume, when we worry about wine that is left unsupervised, we don't assume that the non-Jews will go through a lot of effort to try to take wine and then restore it and put it back together the way it was. That much effort they're not going to do. Now, some sources sound like you need two aspects to it. You need that it take a lot of effort, and also that you need zeal, that in not only effort in terms of physical effort, but that it also be very difficult to restore it. So, for example, when people, let's say, would write their names or write in Hebrew as a seal, that's because in order to put it back together, you'd have to know the Hebrew letters well enough to know how to align them fully properly. But with a Magufa Shel Eitz with a cover, that's only got the issue of it takes a lot of effort, but it doesn't have any element of ziyuf, any element of it'll be clear from looking at it that it was taken off and resealed. Nonetheless, his understanding, the Avodas HaGershoni's understanding, is that tircha is a good enough, that the effort is a good enough quality, and if therefore it's only possible to open up with a lot of effort, because you steal it very well when you close it, especially for old wine, he thinks that counts as a seal, and therefore this wine barrel was sealed in that way, and therefore in those terms it should be okay. He points out that the Torah speaks about a situation where somebody puts another kli of some sort over a barrel or on top of a barrel and puts it on so firmly that it would take a lot of torah, a lot of effort to get it off, and counts that as one seal. So you shouldn't say that's only true when there's another seal, and doesn't count. It only counts as a seal when there's two. He says, not true. He says, as long as there's, as it counts as a seal all the time. And then he raised the possibility that even the Ma'aseh Binyamin, the Taz, who we have said before, required not just that it be sealed very well, meaning closed off very hard, such that it's very hard to open, but you have to put some kind of a cement or some kind of a seal around it to close, to ensure that it stays sealed. He said that's possibly only where the it wasn't in fact attached so well or so hard, so it wasn't attached in a way that made it so difficult to remove. Meaning, when you put something on, of course, it's hard to take it off. The Gershuni is trying to argue that as long as it's very hard to take it off, that counts as a seal. He has these prior authorities who said it's not true. He said, and that therefore you need to line it with some kind of a glue, we'd call it, or a crazy glue, or a cement of some sort, or a sealant of some sort. He says that's possibly only when the seal, in fact, wasn't so good. That's where he is. But you might think the wine is fully kosher. So I think he's not clear in the tshuva, but I think he means we can count this as having one seal. In case of one seal, we don't allow drinking from it. We do allow getting hanah from it. I think that we're getting benefit from it. I think that's what he's talking about. So this Jew would be allowed to sell it to non-Jews, but not to Jews, because it's not allowed to be drunk from anymore. I think that's what he means. And some people had thought, it was possible to say that the wine itself could be considered kosher, because the Rashba and the Rashbam, in the name of Rashi, and the Torah quoted them, had this view that if you give wine to a non-Jew, even if you tell him that you're going to be far away, but the non-Jew is always going to have the wine in a place where there's lots of passers-by. So in those situations, he says, we don't worry that the non-Jew will open the barrel and take wine from it, because he's always going to be worried that people are going to see him. So maybe you would have said that here too, that since the wine is going to be in a carriage or in some kind of a transport system where there's lots and lots of people around, and therefore we might have thought that the non-Jew would be afraid to take wine from this barrel because people would know and see that the non-Jew transporting the wine is taking wine from the barrel. But he says it's not true. Because I think they're going to be on the road together in a car, and they're going to be on highways, and if they stop anywhere, people will see it and they'll know it. So he says it's not possible here to say that, because the case was there was a non-Jew plus his helper, plus his assistant. And in that situation, says the Avodah Sagirshuni, if they get very thirsty, they could have one stand by the road to watch and one of them opening the barrel in a way that nobody would see if they stop, and therefore they'll be able to do it. And he points out that the Rashba himself speaks about a derech akalaton. If there are forks in the road, there are places in the road where one could turn off the road a little bit and take some wine, then that heter will go away. So the idea that if the non-Jew is always going to be in public, that you don't have to worry about it, even if the Jewish owner isn't nearby, that's only true if there's always going to be people around. A, he has no way to protect himself from it, such as by having somebody else watch for him, and there's no way to get off the road. So that's not going to apply here. But then he goes a step further. So this is why I'm not clear on it. He might mean that the wine is completely permissible, not just permissible behind the eye. He says it seems like he can't drink from it. And now he says, but I think maybe you can even say that the wine is fully permissible, I think. Because you don't have to worry that the non-Jew drank. You don't have to worry now, we say, that the non-Jew opened it because he's not going to open it because it's too much effort. Then you might have thought that he would find a way to get the wine out and drink from it. Meaning, as we've seen once before, maybe you could make an opening between the staves of the barrel and get wine out, or make some kind of a small hole of some sort that nobody would notice and get the wine out. We say, but if the non-Jew were to do it, the way he would do it is he would put in some kind of a straw, some kind of a hollow circular thing, and you'd put it in an empty space, which is the way people often drink wine out of barrels. They don't drink wine from the barrel. So he says if he does that, that's going to be okay. We'll see in a second. The other way to drink from it would have been to drink derech hamineket, which would be, I think you stick something in, you drink directly, you put your mouth right up to it and drink directly from it, because that doesn't happen so much when you're on the road. And if you worried, because that way you did it, then the problem is that all the wine that's being drunk by this non-Jew is sort of connected to all the wine in the barrel, and all the wine in the barrel gets affected by the non-Jew's contact with it. But But where he's going to do it by this straw, the point was he wasn't going to drink from it. He was going to pour out into a cup and then drink from the cup. And so since he's going to do it that way, that doesn't affect all the wine in the barrel. It only affects the wine he actually drinks from the cup. And that's why he thinks it's okay. So it's in a place of hefsed, he thinks you can be matir as he thinks you can allow this wine and allow the man to get away with it. And he says he thinks the Maharil agrees with him. And then just something to notice about, reminder about libraries and what people do and don't have. In the 20th century, when we see Chivot, they refer to this sefer and this sefer and this sefer, and they always assume that people have all these same books that they have. But he says here, the Avodah Gershuni in the 1600s says, Im yesh oto ha-chuvot, ha-chuva biyado. If you have a copy of the Maharil, if you have it, you can see it. And if you don't, you don't, because in those days it was much less common to have these full libraries. In any case, he thinks that this is room to allow it. So for all these reasons, he thinks that you can drink the wine. It's a sveik sveika. Maybe the non-Jew didn't drink it all. And even if you drank from the wine, maybe you only drank it in a way that it doesn't prohibit all the wine in the barrel. It only prohibits the wine that he actually drank. But that's not our worry because we don't have that in front of us. And he says, but he notices it's not what's called a sveik sveika hamitapech. Usually in order for a sveik sveika to work, in order for us to allow a double doubt to have effect, the two doubts have to be completely independent of each other. And that meaning that you could, so it's called a mitapech, because you could reverse the way you present it, it would be the exact same thing. So in our situation, that you don't have that, because you say maybe he didn't drink, and if he drank, maybe it was in a way that it didn't make the rest of the wine prohibited. But that's not a double suffix, because if I said it the other way, maybe if he drank, it was only, and maybe he didn't drink, that's not, in, if he drank, I already included the other thing. So nonetheless, he thinks here, there's room to be lenient, and a mekel is not mafsi, it doesn't lose out, and therefore that's his tshuva about how much we have to worry about a non-Jew transporting a Jew's wine, what kinds of seals we need to have, and the level of effort the non-Jew would have to make in order to sort of cheat. All of that is part of this response of Avodas HaGershuni, our new respondent for Hoshana Rabbah, who along with your students who shall not give us at least something to learn in our series of response of the day for Hoshana Rabbah. I wish you all a Chag Kasher Sameach, a Chag Sameach of Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, whether they are one day or 2 days, depending on where you are, and that we all share happy times very often in the future. And I think for Hoshana Rabbah, people still say a good kvittel, so I'll leave you with that. Responsible day for Hoshana Rabbah, a good kvittel.